Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 64, recorded Tuesday, April 29th, 2008. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: escaping the travel bubble and Mark's travel tips. I'll tell you, this week, this has been a tough podcast to get out. I started writing this 2 weeks ago on my flight to Amsterdam. I wanted to be able to say, coming to you today from the Hotel de Zuid Inval in Haarlem in the Netherlands, butchered pronunciation and all. And after I listened again to episode number 27, which was the Best of Travel Commons 2005, and I was listening to that before posting a new link to it on the website, and I heard the litany of hotel rooms.
Coming to you from the bathroom of the Camelback Inn in Scottsdale, Arizona.
From the bathroom of the Wardman Park Marriott.
Bathroom of the Budapest Marriott.
From the bathroom of the LAX Westin.
Courtyard in East Memphis.
In the bathroom of the Stamford, Connecticut Marriott. From the bathroom of the Orchard Hotel in San Francisco.
The Marriott in Memphis, Tennessee.
From the bathroom of the Residence Inn on Tudor Wharf in Charlestown.
Toilet of the Novotel in downtown Geneva. Switzerland.
From the bathroom of the Marriott Courtyard in Oldsmar, Florida.
From the bathroom of the Civic Center Marriott in downtown Durham, North Carolina.
Coming to you from the DoubleTree Club in Santa Ana, California.
From the bathroom of the Philadelphia Marriott.
Well, it made me want to get out of the Chicago studio and sort of back to the Travel Commons roots. However, as so often happens with international business travel, I ended up actually working almost two business days each day. A full European day with my client in Haarlem, and then a U.S. business day. Indeed, even after going to bed, my cell phone would ring at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning with someone from San Francisco trying to get hold of me. I ended up choosing sleep, well, at least a couple of beers, and then some sleep over recording in a new hotel bathroom. Then, last week, I was bouncing between New York and Minneapolis, still carrying my recording gear, but still not able to get anything down on tape. On flash memory, I don't know what we call it anymore. So now this week, I'm back in New York, and I'm coming to you from the Brooklyn Marriott across the bridge from Manhattan. I did have a good trip to Amsterdam a couple of weeks ago in spite of all the hours that I ended up working. I flew into Schiphol the Monday night, and unlike my trip in January, where the three-hour delay caused by the baggage loader's collision with the United 767 led off the Zen of Delay topic in episode 61. Now, this flight actually went off without a hitch. And I kind of like Haarlem, although the hotel, see if I can make all my Dutch listeners bleed from their ears, De Zuid Inval. You know, Dutch sometimes, I hear these Dutch conversations, it almost sounds like, this could be rude, but it almost sounds like competitive throat clearing. Dutch is not a language I'll ever be able to pick up, but anyhow, the hotel is in sort of the nondescript industrial, light industrial outskirts of Haarlem. But the city center is very nice. The town square surrounded by a big old church ringed with shops and bars and restaurants. Of course, with 100 euros from the ATM machine cost me $159, I'll tell you, there wasn't a whole lot of souvenir shopping. I did see, though, what I thought was a classic Dutch scene the next night, Tuesday night. I was in the center of Haarlem, walked into a bar full of guys in tuxedos drinking beer. I couldn't tell if they were getting ready for, you know, some pre-drinking before a black tie event or before one of their, you know, one of the guys getting married. Anyhow, they finished their beer, put on their very sensible winter coats over their tuxedos, walked outside. They all picked up a bicycle, and mind you, not cool-looking mountain bikes, but like beat-up grandma bikes. And then they all just sort of pedaled off to the next bar. You know, I'll tell you, the Dutch and their bicycles, I always get a kick out of that. Oh, and one last thing. Listen all the way to the end of this episode, this program, and to hear about our third anniversary contest. So, following up, coming through security at Schiphol, putting on my belt, trying not to miss a belt loop while the screeners on the x-ray machine were rushing me to get my bags off the belt, I was reminded of a note I had received earlier in the month from Leo Vigoda. Leo writes, "On Sunday, I flew to Beijing, and because I hate having to remove and replace my belt, I just packed it in my carry-on and put it on when I got to the lounge. As I took out my belt and put it on, a chap sitting next to me did the same. Building a security system around varying states of undress is just ridiculous. Worse, the variations in the system make it almost impossible for even a regular traveler to be prepared. In Europe, I always have to remove my belt, but not my shoes. In the U.S., I always have to remove my shoes, but not my belt. In most airports, I have to remove my laptop for scanning, while in others, like Heathrow, I do not. I once had a tiny spring in a toggle of a sunglass pouch trigger the metal detector in Brussels, while I've walked through the metal detector with a forgotten iPod in my pocket in Minneapolis. A little consistency would go a long way." Leo, thanks for that. And I think that is absolutely everybody's sort of pet peeve. The last time I looked at the TSA's blog, The Evolution of Security, I don't know that title. I mean, so what stage of evolution are we in? Some days, I don't know, it feels like we're still wallowing around in the primordial ooze. Well, anyhow, the last time I looked, the most popular comment tag was inconsistencies. And flipping through sort of the first couple hundred comments, I'll tell you, nobody's very happy about it. I'm looking forward to trying the Clear Lines, the registered traveler program, on one of my next trips. Clear costs in the U.S., Clear costs $100 a year plus a $29 one-time TSA registration fee. However, a couple of the hotel frequent sleeper programs, the two that I know of, Hyatt and Marriott, are giving away the first year free to their top-tier status holders, Hyatt Diamond and Marriott Platinum. I filled out the application online and then earlier this month stopped by the Clear Enrollment Station in San Francisco Airport to have images of my passport, driver's license, irises, and fingerprints captured. It took about 10 minutes. There wasn't anybody else enrolling when I was there. Now, I know a lot of people get queasy about a company having that much biometric information. I mean, me included. I mean, when the Jewel grocery store chain in Chicago offered a pay-by-fingerprint program, I'll tell you, I wanted no part of it. I hesitated a bit around Clear, but in the end decided to go through with it. I mean, perhaps I skipped the Jewel program because I didn't see a whole lot of incremental benefit from giving them my fingerprint. Paying with cash or with a credit card, you know, isn't all that difficult. However, if the Clear program can shave 10 to 20 minutes off my time in security lines in Orlando or San Jose or San Francisco, well, that's worth something. Anyhow, I received an email from Clear yesterday saying that I'd been approved 10 working days after my imaging my iris. So, I mean, not too bad from a processing standpoint. Obviously, some of my youthful indiscretions are no longer smudging my record. Hey, Lori Hum commented on my TSA rant in the last episode. She said, "Mark, you really hit the nail on the head with your point about why people have such little respect for the TSA. I think that if the TSA management could just look through the PR problems and look through the lens of respect and decency instead of policy and procedure, there'd get a lot more cooperation from us travelers. It's really hard to give respect when you aren't getting it. The nipple ring incident was particularly upsetting because they were just so focused on why she was setting off the machine and not on whether a nipple ring constituted an actual threat. Drew Lifehide of the Budacast podcast reacted a bit differently listening in from Hungary. The story about the nipple piercings going through the metal detector was amazing. I was in the supermarket as I was listening and just started cracking up." Well, I'll tell you, truth is stranger than fiction on this. I mean, if I wanted to make up an incident to just, you know, illustrate the TSA's worst day, I wouldn't have made up anything near as outlandish. I mean, I wouldn't have thought it believable. I guess I got to thank the TSA for keeping me in material. A quick update on our Hertz versus Avis rental car thread. At the beginning of the month, I did a Chicago to Baltimore to Cleveland triangulation run. I rented from Avis at BWI a brand new Mitsubishi SUV, a great ride. In Cleveland, a colleague picked me up at the airport in a Kia SUV she'd rented from Hertz. Surprisingly, it was also brand new. Just, you know, it only had 500 miles on it, but the transmission groaned. It just loudly groaned every time she took the foot off the gas. We weren't sure whether we were going to make it back from the client. Score another one for Avis. But, you know, what's really bad is how far away the rental car facility is from the terminals at these airports, both at BWI and at Cleveland. They've got these integrated rental car facilities, a single building housing all the rental car companies served by a single bus. I'll tell you, I hate these things. There are never enough buses. The drivers work for the airport, not the rental car companies, so there's absolutely no incentive for them to offer any sort of customer service. At BWI in Cleveland, these facilities are way off the main airport premise, so once a bus shows up, you spend 15 minutes in a sardine-like state driving over the river and through the woods to the rental car facility. And then, to top it off, all the rental car agencies pass through the facility charge. The airports charge them for the lovely bus service in the inconveniently located facilities. Now, compare Baltimore-Washington International to Washington National Airport, where, you know, I walk out of the terminal, across a walkway, into the parking garage, and get my car. I'm on my way out of the airport in a third of the time. Now, avoiding wasted time, be it in security lines or rental car buses, is important for frequent travelers. I mean, time just adds up. And you know, once time is gone, it's not like you can recapture it. It's a big consideration in making travel choices. Now, I don't have much of an alternative when traveling to Cleveland, but when traveling to Maryland, I take into account the BWI hassles when choosing between Baltimore, Washington International, Dulles, and National. It's just one of those things that I'll always keep in mind. Hey, thanks to everyone who contributes their thoughts, stories, comments, the voice of the traveler. The email address, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or you can post them on the website, as Drew did, at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is breaking the travel bubble. You know, I've stayed at the Brooklyn Marriott here a couple of times the last few times I've been to New York. I mean, it's a nice hotel, really good-sized rooms for New York, and a great workout facility. However, it's not totally convenient to my Midtown Manhattan clients. But, you know, rather than taking a cab or a hire car across the bridge and fighting the traffic, I've been taking the subway into the city. I tell my colleagues this, and I get some weird looks. Why do you do that? You know that you can expense car fare. You know that, don't you? Well, of course I know that, but sometimes I get tired of traveling within the travel bubble that frequent travelers often construct for themselves. The cabs, the airport clubs, the hotel chains. You know, even though we may physically be in New York or San Francisco, we float above it. Kind of like Glinda the Good Witch in Wizard of Oz, sort of passing through in a, you know, I don't know, some sort of a parallel universe. The only city residents we interact with are at the hotel check-in desk and the cab drivers. Taking the subway from the Borough Hall stop in Brooklyn to the 32nd Street stop at Park Avenue certainly gets me up close and personal with a lot more New York City residents. Now, during my January trip to the Netherlands, I was staying in Utrecht, but I had lunch in Amsterdam that Thursday. I'd been taking cabs all week, and I'll tell you, I was just getting tired of it. I had a light schedule that day, so I decided to, you know, take the challenge of deciphering the train schedule and sort of chooch it into the city. It wasn't that difficult, although I was kind of put off that I couldn't use the automated ticket machine because my credit card doesn't have a PIN associated with it. I guess this is standard European operating procedure, but not for any of my credit cards. So I got to be up close and personal with, another Utrecht native, but at least the detour to the ticket counter allowed me to confirm that my read of the train schedule was correct. After lunch and a bit of a walk around Amsterdam, I joined the evening commuters on their way back home to Utrecht. Walking out of the train station, I was surrounded, engulfed in a swarm of bicyclists. The commuters got off their train, hopped on their bicycles in what was a dark, drizzly, 40-degree January night, and whoop, rode home. I quickly learned through some urgent bell ringing and some near handlebar impalements that bicyclists have the right of way over pedestrians in Holland, but I also came away with, I guess, you know, just a little taste of a day in Dutch life, and more so, you know, more of a taste than I would have ever gotten if I had taken a cab to and from Amsterdam. We talk about, and we've talked about before in previous episodes, about how frequent travelers tend toward a rhythm, a pattern that allows them to quickly and efficiently get through airport security lines, into rental cars, and to their destination. However, I'll tell you, it's a thin line between an efficient pattern and a well-worn rut. The travel bubble straddles that line. Some travelers like to stay in the same hotel every time they visit a city. I understand that. It's kind of like what I call the Cheers syndrome. You want to go where everybody knows your name. You're also more likely to score upgrades or at least small favors, like having the staff hold onto your suitcase so you don't have to haul it to and from the to home and then back to the hotel that next Monday. It's very efficient, but your path to and from that same hotel can start to feel like a rut. I mean, when I come to New York or when I go to San Francisco, I like to stay in different hotels. It makes me see different parts of town. I mean, this week Brooklyn, next week I'll be in Midtown. A colleague and I were discussing this. His approach is very much more toward the efficient side. And after he declined to join me on a subway ride uptown, I walked him through my whole sort of popping the travel bubble theory. He looked at me and he just shook his head. "I'm trying to avoid the hassles of New York while you're warmly embracing them," he said. "I think that's why you're perfect for this consulting business." "Thank you," I said. "I think that's a compliment."
Please listen to me and don't disagree. Even as we fight, doesn't matter to me. Please listen to me and don't disagree. Even as we fight, it doesn't matter to me.
The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Mark's travel tips. You know, in this segment, I want to go through a couple of recent emails that I've received asking for travel advice. I was looking around on the net for a sound effect of dumping out a mailbag, but I guess since this is email, I should probably just skip it and move on. Joy in Denver asked me if I use mileage credit cards. She writes, "What's your opinion of them? I'm planning a two-week trip to Italy and was thinking of trying to get some miles, some sort of mile points out of it, but I don't travel but twice a year, so I don't know what works best." Well, I primarily use Diners Club because it doesn't lock you into a single mileage program. You can distribute the points to different airlines or to hotels, or you can even buy things. I ended up buying my Bose noise-canceling headset with Diners Club points. But most recently, I've been converting my Diners Club points to British Airway miles, taking advantage of some recent 50% bonus conversion offers that they've had on to rebuild my mileage balance with BA. And then I've also used it to top off other accounts when I needed some extra mileage to meet an award level. I did that one time when I was taking the family over to the UK on Virgin Atlantic. I think I needed an extra 10,000 miles to get that last ticket, and I had it. I had those points in my Diners Club bank, and sort of within 48 hours, I had them deposited within my Virgin Atlantic account and was able to move on and score the award tickets. Now, I also have a Starbucks Duetto Visa card, which I also use occasionally for business expenses. In a single card, it acts both like a Visa card and a Starbucks prepaid card. And I don't know, it seems like every quarter they deposit 10 bucks on the prepaid side, as they call it, the Starbucks card, prepaid card side, because of how much I charge on the Visa side. I don't know, it's a nice little benefit, pays for a family's worth of lattes and cappuccinos every once in a while. But this works out for me because I use OTM, other people's money, to build up points, namely business expenses for which I'm reimbursed. Now, you get the biggest bang when you first sign up for one of these mileage cards. I mean, for example, Citibank's Advantage card, the ones linked with the American Airlines Advantage program, that card gives you 25,000 bonus miles if you spend $750 on the card within the first 4 months. I mean, that's a free domestic ticket. And the card is free for the first year, but then it costs $85 a year afterwards. These mileage cards are not cheap. I mean, you know, by contrast, the Starbucks Duetto card is free. But with the mileage cards, if you can load up the card, and remember, it's a mile for each dollar charged, you can earn up to 100,000 miles a year. Now, that's 4 domestic or 2 transatlantic tickets a year. Of course, like all credit cards, you know, these cards feature a pretty hefty interest rate. And so, I mean, if you pay the card off monthly, I mean, it can be a good deal. However, if you carry a balance month to month, I'll tell you, I think those interest charges could pretty quickly eat up any mileage benefits. Brian from Naperville, which is about a dozen miles west of the Travel Commons studio, wrote, I recently earned gold status on American, and I'm wondering the best way to maximize the benefits. It would be nice to know other travelers' tips for a frequent flyer, but a status newbie. Also, what are people doing to maximize their mileage and segments? Well, Brian, first of all, congrats on joining the precious metal ranks. I think the biggest benefits you get from Advantage Gold, that first level of status, are at the airport. Many airports have special security lines for first class and status frequent or premium frequent flyers. These can be huge time savers. The status line is often shorter and usually quicker because it's filled with more seasoned travelers. Also, you get early boarding. Now, American usually boards first class and executive platinum first, then platinum, and then seating area 1, which includes gold. Now, unless you're on a big American trunk route like O'Hare to DFW, O'Hare to Dallas, you'll be sort of one of the first, say, 25 on the plane, which means there'll be enough overhead storage for your carry-on. Avoiding having to gate check a bag and then, of course, having to wait at the other end at the baggage carousel is another huge time saver. Now, you also get some of these benefits when you fly on other oneworld airlines. That's the alliance that American is in with airlines like British Airways, Finnair, Iberia, Qantas, Malave. The coverage depends on each airline, so it's always good to check before you fly. Now, on the flip side of this, you're at the bottom of the status queue, Brian. I hate to break that one to you. Want to score a first-class upgrade? Hope there aren't any executive platinums or platinums on your flight because American will put them on the list in front of you. You can get lucky, but I'll tell you, I wouldn't bank on too many upgrades. And then maximizing mileage and segments, you read all the time about people doing mileage runs, sort of taking goofy itineraries to build up segments and miles that count towards status levels. Lots of folks do it, but I'll tell you, given the state of air traffic these days with the chance of missing connections, I'd say you need to have a lot of time on your hands to make this stuff worth your while. Probably easier to use that, Citibank Advantage card. And since Advantage members with status, Gold, Platinum, Exec Platinum, are not subject to the 100,000 mile a year cap, man, load it up with other people's money. Hey, if anyone has other suggestions for Joy or Brian, please post them on the website at travelcommons.com or email them to me at comments@travelcommons.com, and I'll cover them in the next episode. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons Podcast number 64. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music is from a couple of sources. The first song, Seven Ghosts One, is from the instrumental downloadable collection Ghosts 1 through 4 by Nine Inch Nails. Played another one of their songs on the last episode of Travel Commons number 63. I'll tell you, I was never a huge Trent Reznor Nine Inch Nails fan, but I like some of the stuff in this downloadable collection. And you know, you can get the first one. It's Ghosts 1 through 4. I think Ghosts 1 you can actually download for free and give it a try out. It's all it's kind of instrumental ambient sort of stuff. I really kind of like it. Some of the stuff is really good. Some of it's a little weird. But some of it, we played Three Ghosts One on the last episode. I like that one, and I like this one, too. Now, the next two songs are from the Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. When Irish Eyes Are Burning from the Ike Riley Assassination. That's a Chicago band that my son and I saw open for the Pogues in a concert that we saw the week before St. Patrick's Day. And then the third song, Stupid Now by Bob Mould, the former Husker Du guitarist, off his new album, District Line. So anyhow, check out the show notes for links. And remember, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, audio files, and post comments on the website. And now, as promised, our third anniversary contest, the prize, first level status on United Airlines. Because I ticked over 30,000 elite qualifying miles last month, United has given me the opportunity to nominate a regular United Mileage Plus member to Premier Associate status, which is their first level first level status. So on United, that means, you know, we talked about some of the benefits in the last segment that Brian gets for being Advantage Gold. So very similar benefits, early boarding, entry into the status security line. Also on United, the nice thing too is you also get access to the Economy Plus seating, which is in the front part of the plane and has the extended legroom. So anyhow, that's the prize. Now, if you live in Dallas or Cleveland, you know, American hubs or continental hubs, this probably isn't too useful of a prize. But if you live in, say, Philadelphia or Frankfurt, home of United Star Alliance partners US Air and Lufthansa, who also have a reciprocal deal to recognize United status, well, this could be useful, let alone if you live in D.C., flying out of Dulles, San Francisco, or Denver, or Chicago, being big United hubs. This prize could be useful for you. Well, that's the prize. Here's how you win it. Remember, Travel Commons is all about the voice of the traveler. So send your best travel story and your name and your United Mileage Plus number to comments, again, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com by May 15th. The best story, as judged solely by me, wins the premier status, with the caveat that the story has to be clean enough for me to read on the May episode of Travel Commons. Remember, you need to already be a United Mileage Plus member for me to nominate you for premier. Now, that's easy enough to do. You can do it online if you're not already a Mileage Plus member. But remember, send in your story by May 15th, again, to our regular email address, comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. The winner gets premier status and a feature spot on the next episode of Travel Commons. So I am looking forward to reading those stories. I hope somebody enters the contest. Otherwise, I don't know what I'm going to do for an episode in May. But anyhow, thanks again for listening, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Talk to you soon. Take care. Travel safe. Bye now. Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer.